I'm here with Mike Gibbs at Infinite Printing Solutions. Infinite Print Solutions. Look at me. I've worked with you for so long, and I still didn't get the name right. And we're going to talk with him about his life and leading up to Richmond and here in Richmond. And so, Mike, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and tell me, let's start off by where you were born. Where did you grow up?
I actually was born in Richmond.
Okay.
And it was in 1954. And then I had a short stay in Connersville, Indiana, but was back here by the time I was five.
Okay. So my dad's work. Okay.
He worked for a company that made, I think, washing machines or dishwashers or something. He was a draftsman. And that was back when they used pen and paper and slide rules.
Yeah. Drafting was my favorite class in
was
seventh
really?
Grade.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So
they
he was
should
a draftsman.
Teach it. They should teach it. I think it would still have some relevance.
I agree.
But then when I moved back, I really have been a lifelong resident of Richmond up until college. My dad was transferred from Belden to Franklin, North Carolina, where they had a plant, and he became the plant manager down there right at the time I was leaving for Indiana University. And I only lasted about 2 years at Indiana University, got married, and moved to North Carolina, where I became a radio disc jockey.
That's funny.
Yeah, it was funny because this was such a small radio station that I had to, we actually read the obituaries out of the newspaper.
You're kidding.
During the lunch hour.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, it was, and I can still remember Neil and Potts Funeral Home, so.
Oh my goodness.
It was amazing. But
was it what you wanted to do, did you think? Or was
I really
just
thought
kind of
I wanted to be in radio and television. Okay. I was majoring in radio and television at IU. And once I got that taste of radio life, I decided, well, I got married, like I said, but then we moved back to Indiana. And I just went to Ball State then and finished my degree in business.
Okay.
And I was one of those people who just wanted to get through college. I didn't love school.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was get that degree and move on. But so, yes, I got the degree in business and then have held jobs in virtually every type of industry you can think of.
Really?
I started out in banking. And then after banking, I became an executive director for Junior Achievement.
Really?
Yes, I was the executive director here for 2 years. Then I went to Belden, and I became a part of their manufacturing control department as a supervisor there. Then let's see, what was after Belden? I think it probably was printing. Which is what we're in
Which
today.
Which is where we're in now.
Yes. My dad actually had retired from Belden, and he bought a small company called Augustine Printers. And I said, you know, I've always wanted to be in business for ourselves. And he said, well, let's try it. So we kind of joined forces, and we've been printing ever since.
Has it been your favorite industry so far?
I think being in business for myself has been my favorite industry.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that overall printing is the greatest choice in the world because it's, you know, printing's tough. We do a lot of things that are very customized. And, you know, I told one of my people the other day, I said, I wish we were the water company. Where all we sold was water.
Just one thing.
If you don't want water, we don't, you know.
<That's>
because
funny.
We do, I mean, we do so many different things. We do, you know, screen printing. We do paper printing and so forth. So it is, it's a challenge. And everything's custom. So, you know, nobody gets the same thing every time. Every customer has a different product and different processes it goes through. Yeah.
I think something that's neat about you, though, is that you all employ artists, too. I mean, you have
that's
an
true.
Artist on staff to help.
And I have to say, I couldn't be in the printing business without the creative part. That's the most fun to me. It's it's watching people, you know, enjoy not only what they see, but mm-hmm. it's me watching our people create, mm-hmm. you know, and feel the, you know, the excitement over doing something that's different and it's new and it's fresh.
Yeah,
So that is neat.
Well, the people that you've employed, I think, have always been your best asset. I mean, well, I've worked with you for years and years and mm-hmm. years, probably going on 20 years now, and I mean, you all have caught spelling errors. There are all kinds of things that feel like normal.
That's the hardest part about today's environment mm-hmm. and business is that if I didn't have my mom and my sister, mm-hmm. you know, literally still in this business, I'm not the greatest proofreader in the world, but they are proofreading Nazis.
Yeah, you know? And they don't, and you're not paid to proofread. It's just you all just don't want your customer to be unhappy.
Right.
I love that.
And you know, they are so good at, and the bad thing is that they're so good at catching so many things that it tends to slow down the process.
I'm sure it does.
You know, or it backs up the process because we get to the end and go, oh my gosh, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
You know, And we're doing a letter right now where I have a tendency to do the very, very same thing. If I'm typing out, you know, this is your invoice, mm-hmm. I'll leave the R off of your.
Oh,
and it'll always say, this is you invoice. And, you know, I don't catch that.
Yeah. You know, Thank God for Rhonda and Betty, right?
That's right.
So is it hard to work with family?
It's not hard for me. I think that the tough thing about a family-owned business is maneuvering around the personalities that you got to live with every day and all the time. But that tends to be my nature, is mm-hmm. the compromiser, the, you know, the smoother over, the let's look at the bright side here kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the part that is the toughest in most family businesses. It creates a rift. And in fact, years ago when we had first gone into business, I had a cousin who was a partner with my dad and I, and for some reason we just had a falling out,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I don't, you know, I don't know exactly what all the issues were. Mm-hmm. I knew some of them,
mm-hmm.
and so, you know, comes a time when it just, it's better to, you know, separate your ways and move on, because you're not really going to fix some of those family problems.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I didn't want to do was have it carry on through, you know, all the family events, whether it's a reunion or a Thanksgiving or whatever.
Right.
You really just don't want those things, you know, cropping up. So family businesses are tough. They come with, you know, that other baggage that you've got to kind of work through.
So you have children working with you now.
I have, yes. Right now I have a daughter and my oldest son. My oldest son is probably here for the duration.
Mm-hmm.
He's incredibly good at design. He's basically a one-man show in regards to our screen printing and embroidery and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We did just recently hire a helper for mm-hmm. him, so because it's picking up and it's getting bigger. But my daughter is also working with us. She has plans to go back to school and maybe do a nursing thing, which is one of her mom's areas of
mm-hmm.
expertise. And my daughter is a twin, and her brother just became a Richmond firefighter.
Oh, exciting. So, that's
yes.
cool. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, a couple years ago, you made the decision to buy several different printing shops in Richmond, right?
We actually bought only one printing shop.
The
interesting thing about it was Paust Printers.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing was that Paust, about, you know, 7 to 10 years prior to that, bought up a lot of other little
print
shops.
Oh, okay, so that's
so
where, okay.
They had already consolidated a lot of those shops.
Okay.
And so when we kind of stepped in and said, okay, and Ken was, I think, he was definitely in his late 70s,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it was time for him probably to think about hanging it up.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been friends and talked for years, and mm-hmm. we'd always banter about, and I think the one thing that he couldn't really understand was that I didn't want to work for him, and he didn't really want to work for me, you know. But so we would just always be friends, and
mm-hmm.
then finally when he decided to to give it up. I just acquired his assets, and we kind of merged together. And that was kind of the catalyst for the change of name and all that sort of thing, because there literally was, there was Augustine Printers, which was us. There was Kimbrough Printing. There was Bumblebee Quick Print. There was Bill's Printing. All of those really became Infinite Print Solutions now after literally for, you know, since 1945, which is when Paus started. About 1970 was when Augustine started. So we've got a real long history of printing here in town.
You're so calm about merging and buying that business and everything. That had been...
It was hectic. It still is hectic because the one thing that we're still struggling with is the fact that we literally doubled our size overnight. When we did that, it wasn't about the printing. We still do the printing, you know, as well or better because of the knowledge and the staff and, you know, the experience that we were able to get. But it's the paperwork. It's the maneuvering in just the simple stuff like the way they used to file orders versus the way we used to file orders. They used a numerical system. We used an alphabetical system. And so we're constantly fighting where's that history. And we still have issues with just the steps. You know, we went from 4 employees to 13 employees. So, you know, all of a sudden there are a whole lot more hands in the mix, and keeping control of that, which is probably falls on me, is a tough thing to do. And I used to use a term that I learned in school. It was called management by wandering around. And and it used to work. It's not as easy to do because it's a lot farther to wander. You know, so. That's probably still our biggest, you know, effort is to just get a grip on turning things into more procedural steps, more process steps, and not just yelling across the room like we used to do.
Well, you have a part of your life that you've skipped over, and you and I are going to talk about, because it was one of the reasons why somebody, I don't know if you know, somebody suggested that I interview you. You were suggested by a couple people, actually, and someone said, did you know that Mike had quite an extensive music career before he got into printing? And I said, I've always seen that sign when we used to go into our Augustine printer on the West Side location. The sign with a billboard chart and everything.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's true.
So
we did have our
Let's start there. Tell me about that.
Well, I have to give credit to an uncle that I have. I've played music ever since high school.
Okay.
And literally, Dr. Bailey here in town and Ray Ramsey, who owned a real estate company, who just recently passed away. The three of us were probably the one and only folk trio that ever had their own radio show at WKBV during high school. And we'd go in once a week and sing 20 minutes worth of folk songs and move on down the road. Well, after college, and when we moved back to Richmond, we discovered that we didn't have... we did have a lot of the same guys, you know, around town. All of us had scattered, but then we kind of joined back together. Dr. Bailey didn't want to kind of put the effort into it that a couple of others wanted to, so we started a group called Crossroads back in 1979. And we were just playing the bars and, you know, that sort of thing. And
mostly
clubs. And
mostly folk or country?
Well, at that time it actually ended up country music. Country music. And we also did a lot of harmony, so we did some gospel. We played in some churches and things like that. Well, in 1979, it was kind of when the country phenomenon, you know, urban cowboy and all that sort of thing was taken off. And I had a brother-in-law who was playing in a rock band, and he was doing the same kind of bar thing. And we were doing the gospel country. And one Christmas, I remember saying, why don't we just join forces and we put your rock band with our country harmonies, and we'll call ourselves Crossroads, and we'll do country southern rock.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of what started the whole thing going, because we had this kind of, you know, a little bit more raw rock background music mm-hmm. with these vocal harmonies. And we kind of likened ourselves to the Eagles and some of them, but we really also enjoyed the Oak Ridge Boys because Ray had a really deep bass voice. So,
yeah.
So we could stretch. We could do a lot of different things. Well, my uncle from Indianapolis, he owned his own employment agency. And one year he came to me and he was scratching. He says, you know, you guys have a lot of chances, a lot of possibilities. And he said, I'd like to take you to a studio and make a record. And that means a record that had
yeah,
a hole in the middle.
Yeah, a hole in the middle, yeah.
And so we made a record. And then he said his accountant needed him to lose some more money. So he took us to Nashville and started promoting the record.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so,
what luck.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
I mean, I'm sure you were great, but wow, for the stars to align like that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if you talk to a lot of musicians...
Yeah.
Those things have to happen in some kind
fashion. Right.
And we, you know, we had a glimmer, you know,
yeah.
It was just a touch because none of us really ever quit our day jobs.
I was going to say, at what point were you doing this? You were back from college, so were you working?
I was still working at Belden at that time.
At Belden, okay.
Yep, we hadn't come to the print shop yet.
Okay.
But, so we were doing... we were traveling once, probably every month or so, we'd go down to Nashville and just get the lay of the land and try to promote our music mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. And he hired a promoter. And, you know, long story short, in 1986, we had 3 national chart singles on country music charts.
That's so cool!
Yeah, and we never got above, like, 75 in the Hot 100.
That's still 100.
But it was,
yeah,
that was, you know, we were 75 in the whole nation.
What were the names of the songs?
There were 2 songs that I had written. One was called Painted Ladies, and the other one was called Sarah's in Love. And then we promoted one that was an old Cal Sills song, and this was my uncle's. He said, you're going to play the song. We're going to record the song. It was called Indian Lake.
Okay.
And it was a summertime, upbeat, you know, pop sounding song. And we went into the studio and literally had to learn the harmonies in the hallway because
oh my gosh.
Everybody in the band hated the song.
Yeah.
Except he said, I'm paying the bill.
That's funny.
You're going to sing the song.
Now, is it right that that's kind of common that you end up, that bands end up playing a couple songs that they just despise to
you
actually...
You know, you reach that point where you've played it so many times.
Yeah.
Now, this one, I think everybody thought was just too bubblegum.
Yeah.
Because my uncle, he kind of lived in the Kingston Trio mm-hmm. era, and he wanted to have us all in leisure suits.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're this kind of rock country band.
Yeah.
We want to be a little rougher than that around the edges, but... But he paid the bills and he made the calls.
And that one still did pretty well, too.
It was actually the highest.
Was it really?
Yeah, over the summer.
He knew what he was doing, didn't he?
He was good. And he later ended up dying of ALS.
Oh, okay.
And so that, you know, I often think if that hadn't, you know, consumed him,
mm-hmm.
where we'd be, you know, today, because again, it's some of those magical moments where things just happen. But he was the cat, you know, he was the guy that really was the Colonel Parker to Elvis or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know whether you've ever seen a Tom Hanks movie called That Thing You Do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was Tom Hanks.
Okay.
He was always saying, hey, you guys look good in red. You know you look good in red.
Yeah.
You know, kind
of
thing. And never a dull moment with him. And he would take us to places we, you know, had never been before. We opened shows for people like Conway Twitty. And
no way.
Mel McDaniel was a big country artist back then.
Wow.
The Forrester Sisters. Porter Wagner.
Oh
you
my
know,
gosh,
we,
that's amazing.
We had, we rubbed elbows.
Yeah.
We never really went over the over the hill because it always people don't realize it always costs money to really get to that pinnacle or whatever.
No, I imagine it does.
But it was always cute. I'd be walking we had a really reasonable following, which was great around the area. And I'd be walking through the grocery store, and they'd go, "Hey, you're back in town." I said, "Hey, I never left."
That's awesome.
You know, it was neat. And, and I think the one thing that I take away from it is that you can look back on that, and during the whole mad, crazy staying up till 2 a.m. and going to work at 7 kind of thing, as hard as that was, and really pretty good memories, you know, because you do end up kind of getting married to the guys you're with, and that and that's another reason for bands that have their same personal problems and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You end up with differing viewpoints on where you think we should be headed and that sort of thing. But
was it ever hard that you were related to that your uncle was the guy? I mean, did the other bandmates ever have issues?
It was never hard with my uncle.
Yeah.
It's actually harder between my brother-in-law and I, who was our lead guitar player.
Oh, interesting.
Because, yeah. We'd kind of have differing views on how things should go, you know, but and again, it's that family business kind of situation. So
I'd never survive. I'd never survive. You're a saint. That's amazing. Yeah. So can you Google the music, or can you?
You know, I don't know. I think you can't. I think there might be something out there. Somebody tried that one time. It would be Crossroads Country Band.
Okay.
And there might there might be a snippet or something. We did have a website, and need to, you know, to tell you the rest of the story today, one of the guys that was actually, I've known him since junior high. We took guitar lessons, our very first guitar lessons we took together.
Yeah.
His name's Dudley Fetzer, and we go out now even on the weekends and sing at local pubs and stuff like that.
Okay.
Just as a duet.
Yeah.
I know he's got stuff on the website, but Crossroads Country Band might have been still hanging out there, but he might have closed out that website.
Okay.
Yeah. After Ray passed away, we kind of dissolved the band.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's something that if I can find it, I want to play a little of it. So just a second.
Okay.
Okay, so I paused and I can't pull it up because I'm not in great internet area right now. But Mike's gonna forward it to me, and I might plunk it on the end of this interview, because I'm pretty excited about that. So, did you have children at the time when you were?
Actually, doing this, that or was not? Probably one of the reasons that the band kind of dissolved. Mm-hmm. There were three or four of us that left the band after we'd had this flurry with, you know, the chart singles and stuff, because we kind of dried up. We really lost some of our enthusiasm and didn't have a lot of new material. And so two or three of us quit the band. The band went ahead and carried on for another couple, 3 years. And then I think it just kind of closed down.
Mm-hmm.
And then back in 2010, we looked around and none of us had passed away by then, so we revived the band and started and had been playing clear up until last year sometime. Mm-hmm. So but when my first son came along, that was kind of really one of those other reasons that I wanted to be around, because we were burning it at both ends and trying to play all weekend and then all week long.
Yeah,
so
that's exhausting.
Yeah. It was exhausting, but it was, you know, at the time there was a purpose. You know, when Dick Moore, who is my uncle, when he was energized and a part of everything that was going on, there was purpose in what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the kind of musician that I really, right now, because it's just the two of us, we go out and we just have fun with it.
Yeah.
Back then, I wanted it to be a business. Mm-hmm. I, you know, just like my entrepreneurial spirit was taking over and saying, I really want to see this thing, you know, come to life.
Yeah.
And after that, it was more of just playing the music. And I enjoyed playing the music in the crowds, but didn't have the same motivation. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's kind of the reason that it calmed down and And children definitely played a big part in that.
Yeah, yeah.
And when we had the twins after that, it was like, okay, now they're coming in multiples, so I definitely don't have time.
Yeah, you need more hands.
Right.
So when you and Dudley play now, where do you play? Where can people find you?
Oh, we play at Smiley's, which is local. We play we've been playing at Little Sheba's off and on. I think we're going to be going back there. We also do some fundraising. We play over here at Big Boys Pizza for SOS, which is Senior Opportunity Services. While we play, a percentage of everything that they take in during that time is donated to SOS.
Oh, cool.
So that little fundraiser that we do. I guess we're going to be playing at the Cordial Cork.
Oh, cool.
In March. No, maybe April. So,
and do you set him up, or is Dudley set him up? Who's the one?
Well, Dudley's pretty much the booking agent.
He's the booking agent?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Mm-hmm. So, you going back to Big Boys Pizza, you all have always been philanthropic. I mean, as long as we've known you, you've always been very community-minded. What drives that, and what are kind of some of your special projects in town that you like to make sure are supported?
Well, I've devoted a lot of time and energy to Senior Opportunity Services because I think it's a struggling situation in that it's in-home health care. Mm-hmm. It tries to provide for people who want to stay in their home rather than go to a nursing home for light housework, you know, simple chores, things like that. And I think we, you know, the bad thing about SOS is the government funding for those things is just disappearing completely. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very poor organization with a very noble cause, you know, as many nonprofits are anyway. But
right.
I think my nonprofit spirit kind of entered in when I became an executive director for a not-for-profit, too. So I kind of understood that side of the, you know, the situation.
It's trickier than people think, isn't it?
It is. And I was a terrible fundraiser, and but that's the name of the game.
That surprises me, really.
You were a bad fundraiser? Yeah, I was a bad fundraiser.
That surprises
It me. Wasn't, you know, it wasn't that I necessarily, maybe I wasn't bad at it, I just didn't like to
you
do
didn't
it.
Like
I
it. Didn't,
you know, it was hard, you know, hard for me. But, but I think overall, one of the other reasons I think it's important that we all participate locally is we got to hold ourselves up. You got to kind of have each other's back.
Yeah.
You know, the buy local thing is good and that sort of thing, but we are becoming a very, you know, non brick and mortar buying society, and with the social media and all that sort of thing. And, you know, it's a tough business when we put ink on paper, and ink on paper is becoming a novelty sometimes, you know. So it's just one of those things that I think certain things need to be.
You know, I think you were always really good about trying new things as far as environmental consciousness too. When I worked at Cope Center, you were always testing out water-based inks and trying to do things to lessen your impact, which I appreciate.
And you know, the tough thing about that is that it's never the least expensive way to do anything. Now, surprisingly enough, and I've kind of accepted this situation, you know, people like to tout recycled papers and recycled products. The nice thing about the printing industry regarding paper products is that the paper and pulp manufacturers have really done their job in regards to protecting the planet. They now have enough trees that they're growing that will provide the paper for what we need, that recycling is not as big an issue because we're not depleting anything anymore. We really truly are, you know, using what we grow and growing what we use. And I think that that's something that doesn't get told to people a lot, you know. So it isn't quite as big a deal to buy a recycled paper, although it does keep it, you know, from filling up trash barrels and things like that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I like that part of it. I like that part of our business because I don't have to feel like I'm, you know, making plastic, you know, which is really causing us a problem right now, I think, as a social thing.
Right. You know. No, I agree. Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate that you've always been very philanthropic and ready to help people, and I think people appreciate that and hopefully pay it forward with you as well. So why do you stay in Richmond? What is it about Richmond that keeps you here?
Family.
Okay.
Yeah. Both my wife and I graduated from Richmond.
Mm-hmm.
All of our parents, all of our grandparents, everybody was here. And at a time when we were in school and we were in other cities, you know, we finally just said, you know, if we're going to have kids, we want them to know their grandparents.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that was a very conscious decision to make it work here.
Do you, what's the kind of stuff you love about this town?
I think that the kind of stuff I love about this town is that it seems to be a town that can have a lot of things regarding the arts and regarding some of the what big cities have,
mm-hmm.
and we're still kind of a small town.
Mm-hmm.
So Richmond has its issues,
mm-hmm.
but I think that in general we're a very friendly town.
Mm-hmm.
I've lived in towns that weren't as friendly, a little more cold. They're not, you know, even Muncie and Anderson and some of the other outlying areas that I've spent time for school and things like that,
mm-hmm.
it just didn't have the same feel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have heard, you know, and maybe you can say yay or nay to this, but I've heard that people who live in Richmond, Indiana,
mm-hmm.
or not Richmond, Indiana particularly, let's say Indiana,
mm-hmm.
but Hoosiers who are born and raised in Indiana leave Indiana. There are a greater majority of those people come back to Indiana than any other state.
Oh, interesting. That'd be interesting.
I heard that. Yeah, it'd be. And I think there is. There's just kind of a warmth. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe, I mean, we're actually just cornfields, but at the same time.
We're more than cornfields, Mike.
I know.
No, but I've heard that type of thing, too. And there do seem to be a lot of people that are also transplants that move into town that say it's just nicer here.
Just
people are nicer.
Well, they're, you know, I'm not saying that you walk down the street and people say hi to you, but I can walk through the grocery and we know everybody, it seems like, you know, so we can't get through the grocery.
Which is a blessing and a curse, right?
That's right. But, you know, it's not because of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that it's an added, you know, benefit.
Yeah, yeah. Do your kids like it here? You think?
A couple of them.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that, you know, it's hard for them. They didn't grow up with the same kind of social connections that we have, and
mm-hmm.
I do. I'm seeing this social media thing,
mm-hmm.
You know, make people less, you know, connected.
Maybe less tied to their homes.
Yeah, and you don't get together with a bunch of other people your age and do something.
Yeah.
I mean, I did back in school. There were, you know, six or eight of us that, you know, before we had girlfriends and boyfriends, we
mm-hmm.
just all go as a group and do stuff.
Right.
And it was fun that way. Well,
yeah.
I don't see that relationship developing, you know, today as much.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, Richmond is happy to have you here.
Well,
your whole family and your mom, and I remember your dad very fondly, mm-hmm. And Rhonda, everybody's just, I'm thrilled to have your family in town, and we appreciate what you do for the city so much.
We appreciate it, and we like doing it.
Good, good. Well, it's nice to have you here. Thanks for being
Thank
with me.
You.
Sarah's in love, and now she's happy. Sarah's in love, and it's for keeps. Sarah's in love, it's nothing like she's felt before. I just thank the stars above, she's in love with me. Sarah, she had such a sad, sad story. She never is happy. Sarah's in love, and it's for keeps. Sarah's in love. It's nothing like she felt before. I just thank the stars above, she's in love with me. Sarah's in love, and now she's happy. Sarah's in love, and it's for keeps. Sarah's in love.